It's 5th of March 2010, Rafe's away, which means the boys will play. In fact, we're not only going to play, we're going to invite a third party along. So along with Mr. Ewan Spence, who's hopefully up there in Scotland.
Hello, yes, and I love the fact that we're now playing with boys, so if anybody is listening from the Daily Mail...
Don't go there. We also have with us Mr. Tim Salmon, off the phone show chat. Hello, Tim.
Hello there, and thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to learning so much from you guys.
I wouldn't bank on it.
He's got a very deep bass voice. Tim, have you ever done Shakespeare?
They wouldn't let me do that. I was too deep.
Yes. But you make a perfect puck.
Tim,
ice hockey?
Tim is very smooth on the phone show chat. In case people are listening to this wondering what on earth we're talking about, phone show chat is a companion audio podcast I do to my phone show. So look it up at phoneshowchat.com and I'm sure you'll find us. And you'll find more of Tim's booming, smooth, deep bass voice there. We've got some news topics and some waffly topics. Let's kick off with a bit of news, cover these stories quickly. Quick Premium has been launched. Go ahead, Ewan, and I've got a comment and a question for you.
Quick, as everybody will know, is one of the leading streaming bits of video that has been coming out over the last couple of years, where you can take your mobile phone and it replicates an entire BBC truckload of video equipment using the camera. You stream the video live from your handset to your Quick page. Quick also integrates with things like Facebook and Twitter, so it can alert all your friends that you're actually doing a little bit of a broadcast, and you can have 9 people watch you watch something like an Iron Maiden concert that already has 75,000 people there already. It's been going now 3 years now at least for Quick going public. As with most web things, people going, well, where is the money? Well, what we now have is the Quick Premium version at a massive sum of $5 a year, which they're doing as a trial for the end of month. And essentially, this allows you to have more options, more tweaks, more settings, saving and editing, and a higher quality version of the video. As well as the streaming, it also records the video locally to upload later, almost like a cached version. And that means that Quick... It's again going, look, we are the mobile solution. There are websites such as like Ustream and Justin TV that do it off the computer, off the webcam. So to actually go out in the hand, there's another few players in here, and Quick is one of them. Now, what's interesting about this Quick Premium version is only available through the Ovi store, not through the Quick website, not through any of the other stores that are going on. And the fact that they said it's available until the end of March, almost like a 4-week trial. I think it's Quick. Just, you know, they've seen the downloads that Quick in its own client is getting through the store. They now want to see what it can do in terms of monetization. This is a nice experimental move by Quick in terms of selling the software, in terms of the application itself. They're providing more services. It's a whole freemium idea of making money for Web 2.0 service. But I will be interested to see if they continue to do this and if anybody else joins in as well.
$5 a year. Is that right, Ewan? That sounds incredibly cheap.
I'm reading off Rafe's text.
Okay, it must be right then.
As we agreed, Rafe's not here, so we can just read his text. It says the Quick Premium version has an introductory price of $4.99 for a year, so it's even cheaper.
Well, that does sound like a good bargain. My question was going to be, and this is sounding a bit mean-spirited, is if they had this extra technology and the improved codec so that they could actually put in increased quality, because Quick has been notoriously poor quality over the years because, you know, the live streaming and handling all the encoding and uploading all at the same time, it usually get very, very blocky, jerky videos. The question would be, if they had this technology to improve things, why they didn't just roll that into the free client? But as you say, that's hardly going to break anyone's bank, and every company in Web 2.0 deserves to make money at some point. So good luck.
Every company in Web 2.0 deserves to make money.
That's a bit of a sweeping statement. Companies.
With last week's sweeping statement of Steve's Guide to Business.
Yes, I tend to speak in exaggerations. You probably and generalizations. You probably gathered that by now. It's why I'm so popular.
Hey, boom. What do you think of it so far? Rubbish.
Okay, moving on. Ovimail 2.0. Ovimail is this Nokia's answer to Gmail. It's Nokia's webmail system, and it was always rather standalone. Even after they launched it, I don't think many people really used it, certainly not in the Western world, although apparently it's quite popular in developing markets. Anyhow, one of the big bugbears was that it didn't synchronise its contacts or tie in with the existing Ovi contacts, which in turn, of course, syncs in theory down to your device, that's now been officially merged. So OviMail 2.0 and the three can become one. Or if you have played with Ovi Contact Sync, you'll know that it's not three becomes one, it's the three become 285, because you get so many duplicate contacts and things go horribly wrong. But in theory, as long as things work, you can now go OviMail, Ovi Contacts, contacts on your device, all in perfect step and all with a perfectly integrated email system. So, Tim, have you actually tried OviMail at any point?
No, I haven't. From reading the story, I guess the issue for Nokia is that this is going to be available to people that don't have computers. Like you said about the kind of developing world, and people can set it up, and it's easy to set up from a mobile phone, basically, and people can get that kind of integration that we're enjoying with Google services, and Ovi will kind of catch up with that. I think that's the general idea, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that'll work actually quite well, because they'll be able to go OviMail on their device as a web service synchronizing to the actual contacts locally stored on their phone, as I understand it. And I think that's a very nice little loose end to tie up. They also launched it with Arabic support. So over 280 million people apparently use Arabic as their first language. That sounds like too small a number to me. Maybe that's the number of Nokia users who use Arabic as their first language. But that's now been rolled into the OviMail user interface on the web. So if you want to find out more, go to mail.ovi.com. Okay, on with the news. Nokia Neuron. I'm sure there's a spelling error in there, but Nokia have deliberately gone with the bastardized version, if I may use that word. Not N-U-R...
No, it's a bastardized, if we're going to follow the Quentin Tarantino way of doing it.
Okay. The Nokia Neuron, N-U-R-O-N. Tim says it's just a 5230 with no extra bells and whistles, but I do think there is a bit more significance to that. But Ewan, do you want to take the story?
Hold on. Tim, what do you mean a 5230 with no more extra bells and whistles? The 5230 doesn't have any bells and whistles.
Well, I think it started off with Wi-Fi, didn't it? And this doesn't seem to have Wi-Fi.
Indeed. What happened is, this is back to something we talked about last week and touched on, with the whole idea of families of devices. This is obviously inspired by the Nokia 5800. Now, the 5800 is coming in at about the £300 mark, and it does have Wi-Fi and eGPS and 3.2 megapixel camera and Carl Zeiss Zens and stereo heads, stereo speakers and everything. But this, the 5230, this is actually much more interesting than the 5800, because it is the cut-down version. Okay, if we're looking at it from the spec sheet, Tim's right. It doesn't have Wi-Fi. It has only a fixed focus, fixed lens. Nothing can possibly go wrong. Basic settings, 2-megapixel camera. Don't worry, Steve. I will still find some way to get it wrong. It only has a mono speaker. The screen, I think there's actually less colors are actually displayable on the screen. It just sometimes the thumbnails on, I actually have one of them here, the thumbnails just look a little bit more pixelated in terms of color than anything else. But this is a handset that is coming in at an incredibly low cost. It's coming in on a pay-as-you-go for just the handset in the US at $180. That's it. It's paid for. It's yours. It has a GPS on there. It has your 3G connectivity. And this is a handset that's for the masses. It's not particularly aimed directly at the geekerati, the people who want absolutely everything. This is aimed for people on the street who want a good phone that does data, that has a touch screen, that has the mobile phone. It's a good enough
and free navigation,
phone.
Free voice navigation, wherever
indeed,
they go.
Yes, it comes with a GPS. It comes with all the Ovi stuff coming in there. So your music store is in there, Ovi Maps is in there, Ovi Mail will run on there. All of those software services that Nokia have been working on for the last 2 or 3 years in full sight that nobody could see are available on this handset. So what you have is a handset. Now, $180 to buy outright or on pay-as-you-go, that means arguably it's going to come in at $70 on a contract, but in a couple of months' time. This is probably going to be free on contract at £15 a month. Now, when you hit that with a full-screen browser with, and I love this, a screen that has more pixels than the iPhone, because they've got to find something, this is going, I think, is going to be a massive seller. The 5800 itself sold by the truckload. This, I think, is going to sell the same sort of numbers, but I don't think they're going to be in countries that will report those numbers. Although it's good, the Neuron is the T-Mobile badge version, and America, yet again, are taking a Nokia and a number and having to put an actual name on it because Americans can't handle numbers for some reason. So, yeah. We're going to call this one the Tilt, the Slide, the Jazz, the Neuron.
If they can't handle numbers, how do they manage to get a man on the moon? There's a conundrum.
Because you only need to go to two decimal places for orbital mechanics in getting out to the moon, Steve, whereas modern computers will go out to about 300 decimal places. So actually their level of accuracy required to land on the moon, they had a fair bit of margin for error.
So if they called it the Nokia 52, they could have handled that?
Yeah.
The Nokia 52.30.
Then 52.3, then you got a decimal. 52, anyway. We've rounded it down. Yeah, this, I think, is a really important handset. This will do brilliantly out in the Far East and Asia. This will probably do very well in emerging markets, and it wouldn't surprise me, given the battery life and so on, that this will do well out in Africa as well. We have to remember, free Wi-Fi is the sort of thing that you only get in certain cities in America and certain places in the UK and Europe. Free Wi-Fi is not a given. The addition of Wi-Fi on here and the loss of it, I don't think it has a huge impact on the device.
Yeah, I don't think necessarily do very well in Africa because of the light levels. I think, if I remember rightly, the 5230 has got the same screen as the 5800, which means it's a transmissive TFT, which means that in sunlight you can almost not see it at all, which I'm guessing is going to be a problem in much of Africa. But and going back to America, yes, T-Mobile is one of the top USA networks. There's if I've gathered it right, and I'm not an expert in the US market, but AT&T and Verizon are the two biggies. AT&T universally derided, of course, because they can't always keep up with iPhone data traffic, but we'll leave that to one side. And then there's T-Mobile, or T-Mobile, as they say in America. But T-Mobile is one of the major networks over there, and for them to be launching this high-profile Nokia Neuron device with something with the 3G and the free navigation, because OviMaps lets you preload and cache data, so they could actually just load the whole USA. And I believe that T-Mobile may be shipping them. Perhaps you can check this when you're in America next week, Ewan. T-Mobile may be shipping them with every street in the USA already preloaded. Then even if they go out of coverage, they're still going to be able to navigate. And that's one huge step on from where Google are with their Nexus One and the Android navigation, and a step over what people can do with an Apple iPhone.
And it's fair to say that people could look at the price of like a TomTom or standalone GPS unit at about $200, or this, and it gives them all of the mapping and navigation, and it's a phone as well, and it will play video, and it will play music, and it will do their email.
And take pretty good photos in good light conditions, although you're going to prove me wrong.
I think this is one of the devices that's going to fly in the face of the number counters. People that say that, well, Nokia's only got such good numbers because they're flogging S40 devices across the world in huge numbers. But actually, this is a real smartphone. It's not an S40 phone, and a Series 40 phone. And when this gets out in those kind of huge numbers, no one can actually say anymore, well, the numbers are fixed there.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah.
Moving on to other news, briefly, Skype for Symbian is now in the Ovi store. We did cover this in a previous All About Symbian Insight, talking about the availability of Skype for things like the Nokia N97. And I did express concerns then that it does use up rather a lot of RAM. I'm really, really hoping they manage to tweak this, because I think an awful lot of people are going to come a cropper. People have been saying, oh, yes, it's working fine on my Nokia N79, I think was one of the comments. And I'm sure when it's up and working and filling your RAM and using all your resources successfully, it's just a fabulous job. You get all the sound effects you get on the desktop. You get all the features of Skype on the desktop. But you try running anything else on your phone and the whole thing comes crashing down around your ears. I started a Skype conversation with you and Rafe the other day. I switched back to check a tweet in Gravity, and Skype disappeared. I lost my session. I had to start up Skype from scratch, which takes another 20 to 30 seconds. I just think that they haven't thought through the RAM requirements. They should have made a client that was lighter and more efficient, and they should have done more tweaking and more optimizing. Maybe they can still do that. Maybe they can do what Gravity did and, you know, knock 10 megabytes worth of RAM off the resource requirements. I certainly hope so, because at the moment I think it's just so heavyweight that it will stop are working on many people's devices, and many people will get disappointed. Tim, have you tried Skype at all?
Not on the newer devices. But what I was going to say was that this is another issue to do with Nokia and other manufacturers not thinking ahead, isn't it? And that their argument will be, well, actually, this isn't our application, and actually, our devices were in the making 2 years ago, and we, you know, RAM was going to be enough then. And it's a kind of developmental question, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't actually done the metrics of exactly how many megabytes of RAM Skype requires when it's fully up and running with say a typical loadout of a couple of hundred contacts. If someone's got an exact figure, then do please email in. I'm guessing it's of the order of 15 to 20 megabytes worth of RAM for one app, and that's just a ridiculous amount. When Nokia agreed to this, they probably looked at things like Nimbus and Fring and even the Skype Java client and thought, okay, well, they're going to come in with something that's around 10 megabytes. We can cope with that. Our N97 hasn't got a huge amount of RAM, but that's not going to be a showstopper. And then this thing comes out and basically takes over your phone.
All I would say in response to that, Steve, is that actually I find that Fring and Nimbus, particularly Fring, they do gobble up huge amounts of RAM, and they do make the phone very unusable in some situations where you've got other things running as well. So I don't think that even those two applications are that straightforward.
I think Skype Out does them, though, by some margins, which just goes to show the scale of the problem. And I haven't seen anywhere any acknowledgement by Nokia that there is a problem, which is disappointing. I thought some sort of warning at the bottom of the page, warning, this uses lots of RAM, please don't try and use it in conjunction with any other heavyweight programs. Ewan?
Yeah, I have two issues with this. First of all, if you're playing All About Simian Bingo, you may now cross off RAM and Gravity from your bingo cards.
You've still got Xenon to go.
And we do, yeah. You may now cross off Xenon off your bingo cards. It's kind of self-defeating there, Steve, isn't it? Skype and all these things have two components to me. The first one is the voice component. The second one is the IM component. The IM component is wonderful on all of these things, and that's what I'm looking for in a handset. We use the Skype as an IM client to run our chat rooms and the editorial discussions and such like. It's voice. And it's this insane idea that you want to put a voice client on a mobile phone just because you can. Now, yes, there are going to be people going up, but you can call America really cheaply, or you can call other people, or you can go people to people. People, you have a phone in your hands. There's not enough effective bandwidth on 3G for Skype or VoIP calls. There just is not physically the amount of bits you can ram down the pipe at fast enough speed. Voice calls in GSM have 9.6 kbps with the compression, and that is good enough. Why people are insisting that, oh, I'm going to put VoIP on my phone, but you've got a phone, because it'll cost a little bit cheaper. Well, you know what? The amount of hassle you're getting, the amount of time that you're wasting on this, the amount of, well, can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? How much is your time worth? If you're saving 5 cents on the call, is your time worth 5 cents for an hour? Really? Seriously? I mean, pick up a calling plan. Pick up any of the sort of long-distance calling plans you can get. Pick up the SIMs from people like Maxroom that allow you cheap calls and local calls going over long distances that do the routing off you. But people, we don't need Skype on VoIP on mobiles. They're called mobiles for a reason.
And what happens if you go out of urban areas and you're back onto GPRS, for example, which happens in large swathes of the UK? I doubt very much whether you'll carry on a high-quality Skype voice call on standard GPRS.
Exactly. You know what you'll do? You'll use your phone as a phone.
Indeed. And also, of course, if everyone starts making lots and lots of voice over IP calls on their mobile phones using the mobile phone data network, just as people with iPhones have found out in places like San Francisco and New York and America, everything just grinds to a halt because there aren't enough bytes to go round.
Indeed, there are enough bytes to do voice. It was designed to do 9.6 kbps with voice nicely with compression. We've not found a better solution. I know it's there. I know there's a mountain. I know you can move it. But guys, what is the point? Just walk around.
It certainly will come, though. I mean, the Star Trek days are coming upon us, aren't they? And the video conferencing across mobiles is going to happen. And we will have that bandwidth. And it will come. It's just not here yet.
Who's going to pay for it, Tim?
Well, you and I.
How? How? The average mobile bill will stay at £50 or $70 a month. The amount of people that have monthly contracts is pretty stable. What the industry is seeing in terms of new user acquisition is to do with churn. The amount of money that the networks are getting in per month and per year for investment is pretty much static and pretty much able for them to sort of plan out over the next couple of years. They do not have enough space to build more capacity or to build more towers or to give people more bandwidth. It must be used more efficiently. And we already have an efficient voice channel. What needs to change is how the networks actually charge people so that people are still seeing the same amount in their bill, but they're being pushed into more cost-effective ways of using the network. Behavior needs to change. VoIP uses too much bandwidth. I'm heading out to South by Southwest this week, and AT&T are specifically having to build 5 extra towers and put in about 100 microcells in the conference center because 9,000 extra people are going to be there. 9,000 people who admittedly are high-end users of networks, so we'll give them that. So that's equivalent of, let's be fair, 3 times and a little bit of windage. That's equivalent of another 30,000 people in Texas, is capital city of Austin. I hope it is, otherwise we're going to get the letters. And AT&T have to put in a massive extra infrastructure just to provide coverage for those extra people, for 30K people, but in actual reality, 9K. They don't have money to invest to create this big, massive network, which allows us to do video and calling and Star Trek-y stuff and so on. Sorry, the money's not there.
Well, when the networks in 2011 and 2012, when they want their billions to invest this, we have it on record here from this very podcast that Ewan Spence and Tim Salmon will provide the money. If I go back a minute, I think I had that recorded down. I hadn't realised you had the resources, Tim, but
I was looking to Ewan.
Oh, he was looking at you.
I've created this called the GSM voice standard, and I'm going to patent it.
Don't go there. These things will happen in time, but I just think I agree with Tim that they aren't here yet, and I agree with Ewan that they're quite a long way off. But video calling has never really taken off in the mass market. For us to have video calling and video calling over IP to boot, I think that's may never happen fully. But certainly geeks will be playing around with video calling over IP in the next year or two. It just will take a lot longer to get to the mass market. And one final news story before we move on. Alpine Electronics have announced something exciting for car drivers. So, Ewan, what's your take on this?
This is yet again Nokia going, yes, sorry, we've been doing this stuff for a whole couple of years. We thought we'd show you now. Alpine Electronics are basically a company that does stuff in-car terminals. And so you have things with Nokia with the music and the GPS and such like. They can provide, the idea is it's like a hot dog. Sorry, there we go. It's just strange spoonerism there. Just drop that in. So it does things, GPS, where the nearest petrol station is, what your car doing, how you're doing for car and fuel, Bluetooth, hands-free and everything. But all of a sudden, Nokia have went, oh yeah, our handsets. Yeah, they talk to lots of cars, and cars like BMW, cars like Land Rover, Aston Martin, Jaguar, Volvo, Mercedes-Benz. And, you know, it means that the phone suddenly becomes this big wider part of the car. Remember that watch that Michael Knight had in Knight Rider? That he would be able to talk to his car and control the car from it and everything and talk to the pretty guy from St. Elsewhere. Like that. And Nokia have obviously been working on this for a long time. It obviously fits in with their software and services strategy. And yet again, they do an announcement and everybody else in the industry just goes, whoa.
It's an odd name, though, isn't it? You're in terminal mode. Terminal mode is something you do on 1990s monochrome monitors, isn't it? Accessing your mainframe. What's terminal mode got to do with cars? Ewan? Oh, snap out of it.
Sorry, yeah. it's got to be called something. I mean, what would you rather call it, the neuron?
Well, you could have called it Terminus, for example, if they wanted the term. Something science, sci-fi like.
Can't call it Terminus. That's a Peter Davison Doctor Who episode.
Terminator. No, that's been done.
No, that's a Jim Cameron film.
Terminatorus. No, I see what you mean. Okay,
I'm not going to mention that film, Steve. I thought we weren't going to bring it up.
I have to say, this terminal mode is still a silly name, though, along with many other silly names we've ridiculed in the last few months on the All About Symbian Insight. But yes, I've been keeping up with Forward Sync, which is the the American American answer to Alpine Electronics integration here, and that does a, from what I can see, a pretty similar job of tying in your in-car multimedia, your telephony, your mapping, all into one interface. So this is from someone like myself who is such a Luddite that I've in my car I don't even have a CD player. I've just got a cassette deck. It could be worse. I could have an 8-track.
And you've got one of those tapes. It's got a little wire coming out of the end and a 3.5mm track so you can plug in your mobile phone.
Oh, yes.
And listen to your MP3 player, yeah?
I have indeed. But,
and it's probably in white plastic with brown lettering on it. It says Philips DCC adapter.
Something like that. Well, I do plan to upgrade my car into the 21st century at some point this year. So maybe it'll come with something fancy electronic and which integrates my phone. Who knows? Maybe I can be a beta tester for Alpine Electronics. If you're listening, Nokia. Never know. One final topic. Let's wanted what we call a waffle topic, something where we can all just let rip with our pet peeves and our opinions on the state of the world and the industry. And
as what Tim, again?
And as Tim's here, Tim has a unique perspective on things, all things smartphone, in that he, like me, gets to try an inordinate number of devices and gets to compare them all directly. And here's a question for you, Tim. How do you think that Symbian compares with the competition these days? You've tried all the latest Symbian devices, things like the N97 Mini, the N97. You've even tried the Samsung IS910 and the Satio. And you've also tried a huge number of Android devices and even the Windows Mobile powered HTC HD2. So how would you compare those today?
In a word, they don't. And I'm hoping very, very much that Symbian 3 and Symbian 4 is going to change that. I desperately want to be a Symbian user. I desperately want to be a Nokia user as well, as I have been for so long, as you know. And I'm afraid that at the moment they're not keeping up for me. When I handle other devices, the latest one in my hand is the Motorola Droid Milestone. They're clearly streets. Even if you are not a Google user, even if you don't use those services, they're still streets ahead in usability. And one of the big things that I was discussing yesterday with someone about the difference between Nokia and the Android system is certainly the desk space, and that is a big difference. And on the vanilla Android devices, of course, you only get three screens, but on the HTC Sense UI, you get seven screens, and that to some degree replicates what you can do on your desktop computer at home. You can have tons and tons of shortcuts and widgets and things that are going to take you all over. Just one swipe away, tap, and you're there. And I'm afraid, okay, the Symbian S60 fifth edition N97 series of computers have those widgets on the front screen, but they're in no way as adaptable, they're in no way as flexible, and I'm really, really hoping that Symbian and Nokia are going to catch up very soon.
Would it be fair to say that the Nokia smartphones are more suitable for use as phones that you'd set up to your own needs and then just use them as day-to-day phones and smartphones, whereas the Android phones you've been describing, for example, are more geared to people who tend to tweak how they use the phone on a day-to-day basis, and they actually enjoy the process of tweaking, of customizing, of adapting, of changing, of discovering?
To some degree, I do understand that argument. I think that the people that are sticking with Nokia now are and Symbian platform now are people that like the hardware, and I really believe that lots of people we know on the circuit that are using their N86 still, and the reason they're using their N86 is that it's built like a brick. It's got a fantastic camera, and it's got a robustness that you don't get in most of the Android devices, and people are prepared to forego those bells and whistles, that new front end flavor of the month stuff that is this kind of glorious desktop and whizzy bangy fast firing Google integration with voice recognition, and they're prepared to forego that or find longer ways around getting those things on their devices because the hardware's so good, and no one can deny that, you know, if you want a camera on your phone, you'll get a Nokia. There's no question.
And there are similar arguments for things like listening to music through speakers. And I've, apart from the Milestone, which I know that you and I have been playing with from Motorola, which has a particularly good speaker, is it fair to say that most of the Windows Mobile and Android devices have pretty grotty, tinny mono speakers, whereas I know the N97 is not doesn't exactly shine here in this disregard, but even the N97 blows away most of the Android phones I've played with in terms of volume. So if you listen to podcasts while you're, you know, doing your morning ablutions, then something like a Nokia makes a lot more sense. Something like the Nokia 5800 has speakers that you could, you know, literally fill a room with. Yeah. And again, they're just streets ahead of the competition. So I do take your point there about hardware.
The other thing is, and quickly mentioned, was that there's a depth of choice as well. You know, that there's so many Symbian devices out there, so many Nokia devices out there, that if you want a slider, if you want a clamshell, if you want a monoblock, if you want a, you know, whatever you want is out there in one shape or other. You might have to go to third edition.
As long as you don't want a modern version of the N95.
Right.
Isn't that what the N86 is, though, Ewan?
Yeah, but it doesn't have the... Yeah, but get the N86. How old is the N86?
Well, a year.
Yeah, I mean, we've had Ansi on video saying, oh, we don't do that form factor anymore. Yeah. It's big screens and everything. I want to bring up on this point as well, and this is where Nokia are losing. And it is acknowledged, and, you know... We're told that Symbian 3 will fix it. And pardon me, pretty sure that it will. But the out-of-the-box experience of a new device is shocking. And they can't rely on the goodwill of the partner. The Nokia 5230, I'll come back to that again because it's my latest out-of-the-box experience and setting it up. And it's an absolute mess. The icons are not in any order. The most important icons are on second or third level screens that you can't see. You're left completely on your own on how to set up things. It's like they have one that says set up email. That's great. But it doesn't tell you then how to use email. There's nothing intuitive anymore about S60 to the newcomer. And I don't know why. Because S60, when it came out, you know, as Symbian or Siri 60, was relatively, you knew where to do, you know, you could work out how to do things. It was quite intuitive. Now, it's become a bit of a mess. Now, Symbian 3 is meant to be clearing the decks and doing a new start. I'm going to change. It's not going to be like that anymore. I'm different. I'm not going to hurt you. It's going to be nice. It's going to be pain-free. And pardon me. Part of me just worries that Symbian 3 will have a new look interface. It will have a consistent interface, but there are going to be things in there that are perfectly fine to finish sensibilities, but are not at all useful in any of the mainstream markets. Now, when you're selling high-end devices to techs and geeks, you can get away with having complicated stuff, and so we can have little cutaway moments and go, what a lovely command line. As you start to move down into the midstream and into the bulk of people, you can't have that. You have to simplify your interface. You have to sacrifice functionality and features for the sales. It's one of the reasons why I think the iPhone did very well, because it was a very streamlined, feature-limited focus on that device.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The 5230 is a great smartphone. It's a wonderful price, but it is just too much of an average thing. And I think that one of the problems that 5230 will have in America is people will look at it and go, I know it says it can do all of these things, but how? There's a lovely example here is in Ovi Maps. You go into Ovi Maps and it doesn't show anything. It's like, okay, but it says you're going online. The thing is, when it comes out of the box, it's set up to look at WAP first as the data connection and then the internet.
And yeah,
it should work for Ovi Maps.
Yeah, for most Symbian Series S60 phones, they default to your cellular data connection over and above Wi-Fi.
And all of these, and there's actually, I was reading on the forums, not our forum, on another forum, somebody phoned up Nokia and went, well, I don't know what to do now. Well, first of all, they shouldn't know what to do. They should know it's connected, it's online, it should just work. Nokia's recommendation was download Ovi Maps 3.0. But the problem still remained because it wasn't there. It was in the data settings. It was in three dialogues down. Although Symbian is wonderful, one of the reasons that people stick with Symbian, I'll agree with Tim on this one, is it does what we want it to do. It has great hardware. We know how to drive it. The problem is, you know, most people don't drive fighter planes for a living. They drive cars. Cars have a wheel, three pedals, and a stick. You know, and you know, most people forget about the central pedal. In any case, it's easy to use, unless you're Toyota, in which case you're desperately remembering that central pedal all the time. It just doesn't do anything. So there's this strange dichotomy of the most powerful will not win until it dumbs itself down. And the one that is dumbed down, everybody thinks is more powerful. So that is a problem for Symbian 3. And, you know, they either keep it under wraps and then show it, and then everybody goes, well, it's not really that different, is it? Oh, that's rubbish. Or they do all the developing in public, and people just don't see that it's a new thing.
Yeah, what's annoying here is that the little things are what let it down. The thing about you stick a new SIM card in a Symbian phone and immediately whatever you've set up gets overridden and the data connection for that SIM card becomes the highest priority access point, the highest priority destination. That obviously makes sense from a network operator's point of view. They want you to use their network. They want you to use the services they're providing for that SIM card. But from an actual usability standpoint, as you just pointed out there, Ewan, if you happen to be in an area of low coverage, when you first stick that SIM card in, you'll see absolutely nothing. And the iPhone and the Android OS, very happily, they intelligently know that Wi-Fi is cheaper and better and faster than the cellular connections, and they will always defer to Wi-Fi when it is available. And I fail to see why Symbian just can't fix this. And maybe it's something, some deal with the devil they've made with the network operators. But I agree, it's very annoying. In your particular case, it obviously bit you.
Yeah, but there's also another interesting thing there, is that those other operating systems default to, we'll always assume we have a data connection, whereas Symbian defaults to, we might not have a data connection, so I'll ask you first. Yeah. And that's something that the power users like. I want to know if I'm using Wi-Fi, yeah, or if I'm using a network or a connection. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you want to hand it to somebody, they say, oh, what do you want to get? I want to get my email. Bang. Well, they don't care. And again, sweeping generalization. But, you know, those slight differences, the Finnish attitude is, well, we'll measure five times and cut once. You know, the American attitude is, just fucking cut it. Just cut it. If it doesn't work, well, we'll get some more VC money and buy another bit of wood and we'll cut it again and we'll know how to do it better the next time. And then we'll have two versions. Woohoo! You know, Finnish. Both versions are right. But in America, they're going to go, well, how many times did you cut that bit of wood? Or just the once? Well, where's all the testing? So, you know, where's all the stuff done before to prove that you know how to cut the bit of wood? We just did it right first time. Oh, yeah, get out of town. You crazy Finns. They can cut it right first time. Don't be stupid.
Before Ewan blows up and before my bleeping machine starts cutting in.
Your what machine?
My bleeping machine. Oh, never mind. I think we're going to call it then. We're over time. Hopefully, Rafe's going to be back here next week to call us to order and to interject some sanity into proceedings. In the meantime, do find us on Twitter at Rafe Blandford, at Ewan, at Steve Litchfield, and at Tim Salmon, a new Twitter one for you to look up and follow there. Hopefully, you get some followers, Tim. But for now, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Ewan up in Scotland.
Goodbye. Rafe's here next week. I better go.
And from Mr. Salmon.
Goodbye from me.
Yeah, Ewan's heading off to the wilds of North America, so there'll be a video series from him, so he may not appear in the weekly insights, but we do wish him well on a safe trip. And bye for now, everyone.